Welcome back to the Pistols Firing Podcast. Today's guest is Carson Cunningham of KOCO Channel 5 in Oklahoma City. Carson covers Oklahoma State, OU, as well as the Thunder for KOCO. He's a great follow on Twitter, one of my favorites, at CarsonC5. And today we talk about the uniforms that Oklahoma State has worn so far this year, as well as some other Big 12 uniforms. We get a little bit into the game in Lubbock. He was there on the field, kind of breaks it down from there. And then at the end, we talk Oklahoma State hoops and what fans should expect from this season. So it was a great time. Appreciate Carson coming on, and here he is. Okay, Carson Cunningham, welcome back to the Pistols Firing Podcast. Appreciate you coming back on.
It's good to be back, man. It's been a while.
Yeah, it has been a while. We did a podcast before the season started, kind of a uniform preview podcast. We've been let down this year, haven't we?
It's been very disappointing. It's almost like OSU kind of just gave up on their uniforms. I know they've introduced a couple new helmets, but like there's been hardly any new uniform combinations whatsoever. It seems like they're kind of just bored with it almost.
Yeah, I think you did have the new helmets at West Virginia and Iowa State, but the only real color combination difference, I guess, was last weekend at Tech, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was the first, I think, new combination. Now, you can say it's a new combination when they switch up the helmet to have Pistol Pete on it or whatever, but it's been kind of shocking that they haven't done anything new. And I mean, and there's these rumors going around that I think you were talking about that they're getting rid of the gray now all of a sudden. What have you heard on that?
Yeah, I don't know how much I can divulge, but I have heard that the gray is on the shelf, not to be confused with the starting quarterback, but it's not going to be, apparently not going to be worn anymore. And I don't know if boosters got involved, or I don't know if Boone said, I can't see the numbers from my suite or what was going on, but, I didn't love the jerseys, but I really like the gray pants. I think they're a good kind of complement to the whites or to, you know, you can use them in a lot of different ways, I feel like.
Well, I agree, and they were also ahead of the pack. I mean, now everyone has gray uniforms. Well, OSU's had them for 2 years, but it's almost like they set the trend and then they don't want to follow it almost. It's almost like it's gotten too cool to wear gray or something.
Yeah, it's really kind of weird because it's, you know, whenever they came out in 2011, everybody's like, oh, this is like Oregon. It's going to be, you know, whatever. But they, you're right. They kind of haven't followed the Oregon path of I feel like Oregon introduces at least something new every, you know, 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah, and it makes you wonder if they're almost setting themselves up for next year having new uniforms. It's almost like they're kind of lulling the fans to sleep, so to speak, with their combinations this year. We still have so many that we haven't even gotten close to seeing yet that I think have a lot of potential, especially at home. At home, I think they can really do some fun stuff. But like earlier this year, they wore the white, orange, white that they've worn for 20 years. Why in the world would you pick that? Why would you pick that?
I have no idea. They did that against, was it Savannah State last year?
Savannah.
They didn't do it in 2011, I don't think, which was great because, yeah, we had seen it forever. But, yeah, I have no idea. I get it for Savannah State, I guess. I mean, you only have so many. But, yeah, don't go back to that. I mean, where's the I did a post on this, but I want to see orange, black, white would be interesting. I can't remember what other ones I had. But, yeah, you should definitely be able to mix it up.
Orange, black, orange I think would look good at home. I'm dying to see black, gray, black, which I know the people that hate gray would probably hate that. I think it would just be kind of cool to see what that would look like. But we do nitpick the uniforms a lot. I think we got to give up props to the equipment guys for the helmets they wore at Iowa State. Those were pretty sweet. That was close to perfect, I thought.
Yeah, it was awesome. It was I thought – so they both said they had those helmets at West Virginia, but they had Silly Pete, as I like to call him on the side. With the stripes down the middle, and it looked pretty good despite the Pete on there. But when they put the black logo with the orange piping on it at Iowa State, that was pretty awesome, I'd say.
No, that was excellent, and we're on record on Silly Pete. And like, I think my dad hates Silly Pete more than we do. Like, he came over to my house on yesterday, and he was like, "Hey, the OSU looked good at Tech," and I was like, "Yeah." Before I could say anything, he goes, "I hate those Pistol Pete helmets. I hate them. Dude. There should be nothing but the brand on there." And so, I feel like most people don't like the Pete. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see if they introduce any more. I feel like they're running out of options on helmets. They've done so many already, but there's only been a few that I've liked so far.
By the way, another combination that I think you would like, I just pulled up my post, black, black, white at home.
That would look pretty sweet. I know you're a fan of the matching top and jersey, which you've kind of talked me into. I normally like the pants and the helmet to match with a different jersey. But you've kind of talked me into the tops and bottoms matching a little bit. So that would look pretty good.
The helmet jersey, the reason I actually started thinking about helmet jersey matching was the Texas Tech game at home last year, and they wore orange, orange, white. And I was like, the orange, orange is a lot. You know, I hate the all orange. but I really, like, when I was doing my rankings in the offseason, I really started to like it. And it kind of made me think of what, you know, I basically realized that I like all of the helmet jersey matching combinations. So, yeah, I don't know. I hope we see something different on Saturday against Kansas. You know, we've always talked about having throwbacks and what that would look like. I mean, this is pretty much the perfect opportunity to try them out, isn't it?
It is. And you're starting to see, like, more and more teams doing the throwbacks. That's more of like an NFL thing that we've seen in the past. But now college teams are starting to do it. I know Iowa State had a pretty cool looking throwback. And this is how much I kind of think about uniforms. When they first announced this 88 reunion, I was like, well, part of the reason they're doing this is so they can wear 88 throwbacks. So Gundy can run out there in like a throwback sweatshirt that he tucks in. That'd be fantastic. But I feel like they have to wear, like, it'll be such a disappointment if they don't come out with the old brand on the helmet and the Barry Sanders 88 uniforms. That's just a huge opportunity. That's like a easy target.
Yeah, it really is. I actually want to see Gundy in the, you remember the old like polyester button all the way up jacket?
Yes.
That I think it was kind of a baseball jacket. Tom Holliday used to wear it, and I'm pretty sure Pat Jones wore it like every game.
Yeah.
If Gundy comes out in that and tucks it in, that might be it for me. I might be done.
Oh, that would be fantastic. I mean, the polyester jacket or just like the old V-neck sweatshirt that has like the collar coming out from the undershirt. I don't know how to describe it. I think they were showing that old clip of Bobby Bowden back in like the 80s, that type of sweatshirt.
Well, who else in the this is kind of off the cuff, but who else in the Big 12 have you been impressed by their uni game so far this year? I feel like we haven't seen a ton. I feel like TCU's done some different stuff. I feel like I've kind of been impressed by what Baylor's done. Have you?
Yeah, Baylor, I wanted to hate the bling helmet that they had. Like, they busted it out at Big 12 Media Days. I'm like, what are they doing? They're trying to be like Oregon. But I've been pretty impressed. They've done it the right way. It's not over the top, but it's pretty innovative with some of the stuff they're doing. I see they're going to wear all black for OU, which is I've always kind of thought it's silly for teams to do a blackout when it's not their school color. It's just kind of amateurish. But they've looked good. I've been really impressed with what Kingsbury's doing at Tech. He has like his own, like, I guess he has like final say on the uniforms and gets to like design them or whatever with Under Armour. But the helmets they wore at in Norman, the gray with the number on there was really slick. It was a different type of, like, I don't know, like a hologram sticker or something. But he's kind of jumped on the gray bandwagon, and I think that was a good looking uniform. And even against OSU on Saturday, they wore all black, but their helmet, the decal looked different than it's looked in the past. I think he's really going to try and take Tech and make them more like Oklahoma State or an Oregon. And I've been impressed with him.
He's kind of working. I mean, we got to grade him on a curve because he's starting with Under Armour at kind of a disadvantage.
I know. He had to ditch his frog skins. He has to wear like these knockoff Under Armour brand sunglasses now, which is just...
Does he really?
Yeah. At least the pictures I've seen, they've been like Under Armour sunglasses. They're not... When he was with A&M, he had the strict Oakley frog skins. And so
I feel like he was wearing like flip-flops when he was at A&M. Like, I don't know that he even wore tennis shoes to the games.
If anyone could do that, it'd be him. He probably did.
Speaking of the Tech game, you were there on TV. I watched it on TV. Oklahoma State looked a lot more. They just looked a lot more in sync on offense. Is that what it felt like at the game? Did it seem like they were just kind of overpowering Tech? I mean, what was it like to be on the field, to be at that game?
Well, it was kind of shocking. Before you knew it, it was 21-0. We were all kind of looking around and going, what in the world just happened here? And all the fans were just dead quiet. But the first thing I noticed when I got there was I was there last year when Tuberville was the coach, and it was just kind of like a depressing atmosphere. And this year, the place was just insane. I mean, they are all in on Kingsbury. He's like a rock star. And you can tell he's kind of put his imprint on the whole stadium. Like, they've really improved their stadium. It's now bowled in. It's nice. But, like, the music is, like, really catered to, like, younger people with a lot of the rap stuff. You can tell Kingsbury's, like, really put all his touches on everything. And so the place was rocking. But the biggest difference with OSU has been Desmond Rowland. I mean, on field level, it's even crazier to see how every single time it would look like he was going to get stopped for, like, 2 yards. And he would do these just kind of slow little plodding moves and carry a guy through 2 or 3 extra yards. And so the biggest difference in this offense has been Desmond Rowland. And just on field level, it looks even crazier that he keeps doing it. Because, like, you know, I was down on the field in the end zones that OSU was coming towards. So I can see the lanes, the running lanes. And half the time, there would not be a lane. He would just kind of, like, bounce off guys and just find an extra yard or two. So the offense looks much better, I'll say that. You got to give Yurcich credit. I thought he called a good game.
Yeah, the fourth and one where he rolled Chelf out was that was right out of the Monk and Holgorsen playbook. That was awesome.
Yeah, that was fantastic. And there were a few calls I didn't like. I thought the swing pass to Jeremy Seaton, just what are you doing? And there was a third down where they did hurry up and threw a little swing pass. The swing passes weren't really working most of the night, and he kept going to them. I didn't like that, but you got to give credit where credit's due. He went on the road and dropped 50 on Tech, so that speaks for itself. But
yeah.
And another thing I noticed down on the field level, you can see the running lanes. There were lanes sometimes where Desmond Rowland would only get, you know, 2 or 3. That Rennie Childs, he has a little Kendall Hunter in him in that he can fit through these windows that Rowland just can't. And he looked fantastic. I think I would give more carries to Childs not only because he deserves it, but to keep Rowland healthy. He was beat up after that game.
Yeah, and I wrote that after the game, and I was kind of questioning whether or not Childs was a better running back. And that's not to take away from what Desmond Rowland's done. I feel like he's been really good the last couple of weeks, but I don't feel like you can run him out there 30. I think he ran 31 times on Saturday. I mean, he goes from like 2 carries a game to 30 a game. I don't know if that's the smartest move ever. But then, like, the alternative is, what do you do with Jeremy Smith? I mean, is he, like, the third-string running back now? That seems weird.
It is weird, but he got a little run early in the Tech game, and then we didn't see him the rest of the game. So I don't know how they're going to manage it going forward. It seems like they almost don't know who to run at certain times just because it's such a shuffled-up unit right now.
Yeah. It's crazy to think how successful OSU has been this season with basically – I mean, you still see on the depth chart, it says or at quarterback and running back, arguably the two most important positions in an air raid offense. And there's still not, I mean, there's a starter, but it says on the depth chart that there's not. It's impressive to me, really, that the defense has been able to kind of keep them rolling through the first 8 games.
Yeah, and it's just insane that, I mean, who saw this coming from the defense? I mean, they literally are the best in the Big 12, I think. Texas, you could have an argument, I guess, with Texas, but who saw this coming? I mean, has Glenn Spencer made that big of a difference, or is it just the guys are a year older and more experienced? It's shocking to me that OSU's playing so well on defense, and it always seems like they can't get the years to match up. In years past, where their defense has been good, their offense hasn't been good. When their offense has been incredible, the defense hasn't been as good. So it's kind of funny that their offense has been struggling while the defense has been fantastic. Who saw that coming into the year?
Yeah, no, it's true. Speaking of the offense, Clinch Health not allowed to talk to the media for the rest of the year, for the rest of his career, maybe for the rest of his life. I don't know what kind of contract he has signed at Oklahoma State. But What as a member of the media, as you are, and as I kind of am, quasi whatever. What do you think about that? How do you like when that first came out that Gundy said that on Sunday night? What was your first thought about it?
Well, I guess I just don't get it. Like, I mean, had Chelf thrown like, you know, four picks and they lost and he didn't make them available. Like, I get it. Like, you know, it's been a long year with the quarterback situation, but at the same time, this is part of the gig. This is big time business. And part of the job is you have to speak to the media. You think Bill Belichick doesn't want to do his Monday press conference? He doesn't want Tom Brady to talk to the media? Probably not. But I mean, especially with Gundy, I think you open yourself up to questions about the quarterback position all season when you start with Chelf in the first game, bench him after three series, go with Walsh, which is fine, and then bench Walsh for Chelf. Like, you're going to get questions about that. So if you handle your quarterback situation like he has, it's a major story. Clint Chelf was Offensive Player of the Week in the Big 12, and you can't talk to the media. He's a fifth-year senior. Now, maybe Chelf doesn't want to talk to the media. I don't know what's going on behind the scenes. I've never got the sense from Chelf that he even likes – I don't think he likes talking to the media at all. Just his demeanor, he seems kind of annoyed sometimes with having to talk to the media. I don't think he really enjoys it, but that's just me speculating. I don't know for sure, but I don't get it. I don't understand why it's that big a deal. I mean, Walsh has been speaking to the media most of the season. I don't know what has changed. Now, maybe Chelf went to Gundy and said, hey, I don't want to deal with this anymore. I just want to focus on football, which is fine. But Gundy should come out and just say, hey, respect my quarterback's wishes. He didn't want to talk to me. Or maybe he's just protecting him. I don't know. But I feel like the way you handle the quarterback situation opens yourself up to having questions about it all year. And that's part of the job. You got to answer questions about your team. And that's a major question.
It would be kind of funny if Gundy still made Walsh available, but not Chelf. Why is it part of the job? Like I get that it is, but I don't know if I agree. I mean, is that like, obviously you have to go out on Saturday and play a football game, but why do you, I mean, why does any coach or any player have to talk to the media?
Well, someone said this to me on Saturday when Chelf wasn't made available. I can't remember who it was or the exact wordage, but he said something along the lines that Oklahoma State is a state's university paid for by the taxpayers, and that the taxpayers have a right to hear from the team or the coach or the quarterback, which I don't know if I necessarily agree with. I just feel like that it's part of the gig. I mean, you play a football game. The media has a job to do. There's a reason they credential media to come to your games. We've got a job to do, and part of your job is to speak to the media. I think that might even be in Mike Gundy's contract that he has to speak to the media. Now, it's in Gundy's. Now, it's not in Chelf's, which is totally fine. He's a student athlete. I get that. But I think it's even in his contract. It's just like I said, it's a big business, and part of that business is you got to talk to the media.
Yeah, I think it's silly. I mean, I'm with you that to me, it's almost like the whole when Gundy won't name a starting quarterback. It's like what is, and he gives the reason of we want the other team to have to prepare for both of these guys. That's dumb. I don't think that's a real reason. I mean, maybe they spend a few extra minutes. I mean, it just feels like a non-reason. Well, like whenever he says that.
Well, especially when he says in the exact same press conference that they run the same offense in the same plays. Well, if you run the same offense in the same plays, and he says both guys are good at running, then what advantage are you really gaining by not naming a quarterback? It's almost contradictory how you say, well, we run the same offense, we run the same plays, but we gain an advantage by not letting the other team know who's quarterback. I don't buy that.
Well, that's the thing. I get more perturbed by the logic of the answers that Gundy gives, or any coach, not just Gundy, than I do the actual answer. Like you said, if he came out and said, hey, Clint Chelf does not want to talk to the media, so he's not going to. That's fine with me. I don't really mind that answer because I feel like it's a real thing. But when you say Clint Chelf doesn't want to talk to the media because I'm not going to let Clint Chelf talk to the media because I feel like it's bad for our team chemistry, that doesn't add up because you've been letting Walsh talk to the media all year. So did your whole like paradigm switch in Lubbock? Like, did something happen there? Like, I get more bothered by the logic that of the answers that these coaches give than the actual answer itself. And like you said, maybe it's that he's protecting Chell for whatever, but I don't know. If he's not, then I think that's kind of annoying.
Well, maybe I have no clue if this has anything to do with it, but you know I'm a Barry Trammell super fan. He wrote that article that Chell shouldn't be the starter on Saturday. Maybe that's what set Gundy off and said, look, I'm tired of people speculating about who's the right or wrong quarterback for my team, and we're just going to stop talking about it. Maybe he just wanted to shut it down just to end all the speculation. I don't know, but I had to laugh. This guy, when I tweeted that Chelf was not made available after the game, this guy wrote, good, keep him focused and away from you clowns. And I had to laugh because Brandon Whedon would do 50 interviews after the game. He would take waves of reporters. I think he was still pretty focused on the game. I still think he was able to play quarterback. Like, the media gets blamed way too much for distraction and all that, you know? I mean, I found that kind of comical, that keep him focused, keep him away from you guys. Like we're going to make him throw an interception or something. I thought that was hilarious.
Well, yeah, I always laugh at that, and I laugh when people say, oh, this team's extra motivated. Like Tech this week, they're extra motivated because Oklahoma State beat them by 98 combined in the last 2 years or what. It's like, when you get on the field, I think Calvin Barnett running, you know, 20 miles an hour at you is enough motivation. You know, it's not like when they're on the field, they're thinking about, oh, well, how many did they beat us by last year and the year? Like, I just think that's like, I don't know. I think it's kind of dumb.
Well,
whenever.
Week to week, every time I go to Stillwater or Norman, someone tries to phrase a question like that, like, hey, are you really fired up for this week because so-and-so or because this or that? And every single time the player has this look on their face kind of like, dude, we only get to play 12 games. Like, we're going to be fired up if we played Savannah State. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, we only get to – that's one of Gundy's mantras, is you only get, you know, 12 opportunities to go play. And it's so true. I mean, they're going to be fired up to play no matter what.
Yeah. Like, when Chelf is dropping back against Baylor this year, I'm pretty sure he's not going to be thinking about – how OSU lost by 20 to Baylor in Waco, and that will help him complete this pass that he's trying to throw to Joe. Like, he's just going to be playing the game. I don't know. I don't really – and that's part of my just kind of annoyance with – and this is ironic, but my annoyance with this 24-hour sports news cycle in general, because it's almost like you do have to come up with things to talk about and invent things and whatever, and it's just it just is tiring. I mean, it's just too much sometimes, I feel like.
Yeah, and it's just the nature of the beast now. It's things are dissected and analyzed. And I thought Mike Gundy made a great point about the 88 team, and it was before their games were on TV. They were seriously concerned that Barry Sanders wasn't going to win the Heisman because no one on the East or West Coast had seen him play. Like, just think about that today in today's world. Like, Barry Sanders would have his own segment on SportsCenter and First Take every day if he was playing in 2013. Like, it would be incredible.
Yeah. Well, I read an article about how Keith Jackson was calling the USC-UCLA game in 1988, and he was talking – I think it was – I'm pretty sure it was USC-UCLA. It was at the end of the season, and he was talking about how – but the Heisman race was down to, was it Troy Aikman and Rodney Pete? Am I making that up?
88.
Yeah. Who finished? Do we know who finished second and third to Barry in 1988?
I'm not sure. I have it right here, actually. Let me pull it up.
Okay. Well, yeah. But anyway.
Barry Sanders, Rodney Pete, Troy Aikman.
Okay. Yeah. So he said, he was basically, he didn't even acknowledge that. This was at the end of the year. He didn't even acknowledge that Barry Sanders was in the race because, like you said, there's not the, you know, Barry Sanders' highlights weren't on Deadspin in 1988 where millions of people were watching them. And so, yeah, I don't know. It's pretty interesting. And I think you know, I think it affects the way that we view players and teams, and especially something like the Heisman, where it's like this individual, really kind of a hype thing. I don't know. I feel like the way that we consume things really affects that in 2013. By the way, do you think your boy Jameis is gonna win the Heisman?
I'm afraid to talk about it. I can't. He is my Tim Tebow. Remember all the people that were obsessed with Tebow when he was in college? Jameis Winston is just incredible. I may dress up as the Stanford tree this week, and I'm gonna be pulling so hard for Stanford. he's incredible. Did you see him in the locker room before the Clemson game where he was just like,
yeah,
hooting and hollering? He was just.
It reminded me of. Who was it for Kansas last year that did the river dance in the basketball locker room?
Oh, it was Ben McLemore.
Yeah, McLemore. Yeah, it reminded me of that.
One of the all-time greatest gifts of all time.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
How great would Mike Gundy have been as a player if he had a Twitter account like back in '88? Like,
oh gosh,
like he would have been like all-time on Twitter back in '88. His confidence was at an all-time high. He was playing with Barry.
That was one thing I loved about the game on Saturday was it was two rather, I'm just going to say, cocky ex-quarterbacks kind of going out each other in Lubbock. And Kingsbury wasn't one for humility and kind of taking a back seat when he was in college either.
No, I had kind of forgotten about that. We did our quarterback draft, and I posted that YouTube, like, over-the-top tribute to Cliff Kingsbury, and he was like Johnny Football 1.0. Like he was like the prototype. Like I forgot how cocky and how confident he was when he played at Tech, but he threw for 5,000 yards his last season.
Yeah,
like think about that now in this year's Big 12.
Well, he's not really that big a guy, is he? You've probably stood next to him, interviewed him. Is he big? He seems like kind of a smaller guy.
No, he's pretty tall. He's, I don't know, 6'2" maybe. He's not he's bigger than Gundy, that's for sure. Gundy's kind of small when you think about it. He's only like 6 foot tall. So Kingsbury's 6'3", so he's built like an NFL quarterback.
Okay. Well, he played in the NFL for what, 3, 4, 5 years?
Yeah, he had like 2 or 3 years, and then he was out. But he had sure.
I was going to ask you also, talking about Florida State, Oklahoma State's 2014 schedule just came out today. We're taping this on a Tuesday. They open with Florida State in Dallas. There's a date at the end of the year that says, I think it's November 29th or November 30th or December 6th on the OU game, because they haven't come up with a finalized date. Somebody on Twitter just suggested they should change the Florida State game to Florida State or Tulsa, so they can have the option to switch out of that game.
Florida State or Florida A&M, maybe? Change the letters around.
I mean, Florida State's going to be number one coming into next year, aren't they?
I think they are, because Bama's going to lose McCarron, Oregon's going to lose Mariota, and you're going to have Jameis Winston back for sure. So I think it's almost a certainty, unless they just, you know, fall on their face at the end of the year, that they're going to be the number one team in the country. And remember how disgusted Gundy was opening with Mississippi State on the road in Houston?
Oh, yeah.
How was he going to react to questions about playing Florida State in Dallas?
Yeah, he's not going to be thrilled with that. Somebody on Twitter, Brad F79, also mentioned that if you think about all the guys that OSU's losing on defense this year, that's not good for that Florida State game, because there's so – I mean, people talk about Baylor on offense, and Baylor's been really, really good. I'm not trying to take away from them. But Florida State is right there in terms of points per drive. I mean, they don't get as many possessions because they don't go as fast and all that stuff. But they're so Baylor's averaging, I got it pulled up. Baylor's averaging 4.48 points per drive, which is really good. Florida State is 4.22, and nobody else is over 4. Oregon's 3.99. And just to give you an idea, Oklahoma State is 2.15, 65th in the country.
Well,
so I mean, Florida State's that's big boy offense right there.
Well, yeah, and they're doing it with an offense that's more like Bama than it is in Oregon, which makes it even more impressive because Jimbo Fisher, he was Saban's offensive coordinator at LSU. He has followed the Saban blueprint to a T, and they are as close as we've ever seen to an Alabama as far as talent is concerned. Like, they have NFL guys everywhere. So it's almost a good thing that OSU is playing them first out of the gate, because I think it would be misleading if they played, you know, if they played like a Savannah State the week before Florida State, that'd be going from like 6A high school football to the NFL, like as far as your opposition. So that is going to be that's going to be a tough task. And they're going to be beat up after that game. Florida State, they beat teams, they beat them up. Like, Clemson was in shambles after that game. Like, they didn't know what had happened.
Yeah.
So Florida State's scary.
Yeah, they are scary. I did see Jimbo Fisher the other day talking about how he doesn't care about having a good team. He wants to have a great program. And I was like, did Saban like write that and email it to him like 5 minutes ago? Or, you know, I think you're right. Like, that's.
Texted it to him.
Yeah, he texted it to him. I don't know how much Saban texts. I feel like he doesn't really have time for that.
He has a minion text for him. Some guy keeps in a closet. He just opens it and says, "Text Jimbo." Shuts the door.
Okay, let's talk about basketball for a minute. Oklahoma State opens the season on Friday night. Pretty big expectations for this year. How excited are you about the Marcus Smart, Andrew Wiggins showdown for Big 12 Player of the Year?
I love it. It's something we've kind of been missing in the Big 12 for a while. Ever since, I think, Durant and Beasley left, we haven't had just like a – well, I guess Blake Griffin too. But we haven't had just like a super-duper star in the league. And to have two – and I love the fact that Marcus Smart isn't trying to be politically correct and say, "Oh, I wish him well." Oh, he's honest. That's the one thing I love about Marcus Smart. He will tell you what he thinks. And he makes a valid point. And this is kind of the point I made about Marcus last year, was everyone had this hype about him. I was like, I got to see him play in a Big 12 game before I'm willing to say Marcus Smart's going to be this great player. Well, then after the season was over, I said, it turns out the hype wasn't enough. Like, he was better than advertised. Now, Wiggins... they're saying Wiggins is like the next Durant. Now, I don't think people would be saying that if that wasn't close to being true. Like, we haven't heard that very often, someone even thrown around in Durant's terms. But I'm fascinated to see it. And the fact that KU's won, what, 9 in a row? Or they've won 8 in a row. They're going for 9?
I think they've won 9. I'm pretty sure they've won 9 in a row or tied for.
They're going for 10 Big 12 titles in a row. That's ridiculous. Yeah. But, yeah, I'm fired up about it. And OSU, like, the story that I'm following the most, or the thing that I'm most, I guess, excited about OSU is their bench. Like, Travis Ford's never really had depth before. And this year, it looks like he certainly does. Like, I'm the president of the Stevie Clark fan club. I've covered him since his freshman year in high school. And the kid he's different. There's certain basketball players that you can tell when you watch them play, they're just... they're different. They're better than everyone else, and he's one of those guys.
Yeah, I've been really, really impressed by and I get it. It's exhibition games and whatever, but I feel like he's very much unlike Keaton, in that Keaton came in and he could shoot, and that was pretty much it. And that's fine. Like, he was better at it than most people, but I feel like Stevie can, like, play basketball, and he knows where people are going to be and what's going on. And I think that's been I think that's been extremely impressive so far. And I think it's going to help Smart out, because you're going to be able to play him only 28 minutes against TCU instead of playing him 38, because you can't put who was OSU's backup last year that was just so bad? The backup point guard.
Oh, my gosh. Kirby?
Yeah, Kirby Gardner. Just horrendous.
Kirby Gardner. Gosh, I forgot.
Yeah, he was so bad. And they couldn't even, you know, between him and Cesar the year before, they haven't had two good point guards in quite a while. So that'll be really fun.
Well, that's,
by the way,
that's the underrated part about Stevie, I just want to say, is people think, you know, okay, he's going to launch threes from the Pistol Pete logo, but he's a really good passer. He played a lot of point guard in high school and was setting up his teammates almost before he was like, kind of like Chris Paul. When I would watch him play, he would set up his teammates the whole game, and in the fourth quarter would just start bombing in shots. So he can definitely spell Marcus, which they need. Marcus was worn out at the end of last year because they had to have him on the floor the whole game or else they were going to lose.
Yeah. Yeah, he was worn out. By the way, speaking of Big 12 players of the year, I'm going to give you the seven teams that have had a player of the year, and I want you to give me all the there's 17 Big 12 players of the year. I want to see if you can name all of them.
Wait, what now? What now? In basketball?
Yeah, basketball.
There's how many?
There's been 17 in the history of the Big 12.
I got to name all 17?
Yeah, you can get – okay, first, Oklahoma State has three. Can you name all three of them?
Big 12 players of the year.
Yes.
We got Marcus Smart.
Yeah.
Tony Allen and John Lucas shared it.
It was just Tony Allen, I think.
No. They shared it.
Hey, this is Wikipedia. Wikipedia doesn't lie, bro.
Because I remember they were co-Big 12 players of the year. I remember that.
Okay, well, that's two.
I'll take on Wikipedia on that. and then James Anderson?
Yep, that's three. Okay, Iowa State had two. Those should be easy.
Marcus Fizer?
Yeah.
And Iowa State. Tinsley?
Yep. Back-to-back years, by the way.
Those were some teams.
Yeah, those were some awesome teams. Texas had two.
Oh, there's been so many guys that were like one and done. Kevin.
Also back-to-back years. Yeah, Durant was one.
Back-to-back. Oh, you gave me a hint. Who came after Durant?
Before Durant.
Before Durant.
This is a tough one. I don't remember him getting Big 12 Player of the Year, actually.
Let's see here. DJ Augustine, I don't know.
PJ Tucker.
PJ Tucker?
Yeah.
He was playing on the Suns the other night at the Thunder game. That's shocking.
Kansas State had one.
Beasley, B-E-Z.
OU had one.
Griffin.
Nebraska had one.
Ty Lue.
No.
No. Not. Is it a... Cookie Belcher guy?
No.
Who am I thinking of?
No, those are
Nebraska.
Both. Yeah.
Oh, Eric Piatkowski. He played in Nebraska, I'm pretty sure. I don't know.
He did play in Nebraska. I think he played in the Big 8, though. Vincent Hamilton.
I have no idea who that is.
Yeah, I don't either. He's the only center to have ever won Big 12 Player of the Year. And then Kansas had seven.
Eric Piatkowski's offended by that. Kansas had seven. Oh, my God. Collison?
Yeah.
Pierce?
No.
Paul Pierce did not win Big 12 Player of the Year. Okay, my bad.
Actually, they had six, but one guy won it twice. So they only had six guys.
Okay, Collison. There's so many players from Kansas that they all could have won. Drew Gooden?
Yes.
Heinrich?
No.
I knew that wasn't right.
Teammate of Heinrich's. No, I guess Collison was a teammate.
Yeah, Collison was on that team.
I'm thinking farther back than that.
Gosh, I'm almost drawing a blank because there's so many players to think about when you come to Kansas.
Okay. Okay, you got LaFrenz, won it twice.
Okay. Oh, my gosh. Twice?
Yeah, first 2 years of the Big 12. Wayne Simmien won it in 05.
Ew.
Yeah, he was not good as a pro. Marcus Morris won it in 2011. Marcus Morris, PJ Tucker, and Vincent Hamilton have to be the three worst Big 12 players of the year.
That's pretty bad.
And then Thomas Robinson won it in 2012.
Hmm.
Which I don't – Thomas Robinson
didn't – He never really did much for me. He never really dominated. Like,
yeah,
I want my Big 12 Player of the Year to have those moments where there's zero doubt who the best player in the league is. And I don't think Thomas Robinson had any of those moments.
Yeah, you know who was kind of like that for me? And I know he's been kind of all over the place, but Royce White. Like when OSU played him, when he was at Iowa State, I was like, this dude's the best player in the country.
Yeah, The crazy thing about him is he did everything well, like literally everything, passing, rebounding, shooting, everything. He was good at everything.
Do you remember the tournament game they had against Kentucky his senior – I think it was his senior year, whenever he came out.
He was the best player on the floor that game.
Yeah, and they were rolling with Kentucky until, like, midway through the second half. And he was, like – he was that Kentucky team was that – I think that was, like, the DeMarcus Cousins-John Wall team, wasn't
it?
Yeah,
it was the team just loaded with NBA players, and he was the best player on the floor. And I think that's why he was a lottery pick, despite having all those question marks coming into the – that game right there was like, we got to take a chance on this guy because he's incredible.
Yeah, he was awesome.
I hope I didn't mean that joke. I was just kidding around, but I hope he figures things out. He's out of the league, isn't he? Didn't the Sixers get rid of
him? Yeah, Sixers cut him. It was Sixers, James Anderson, leading the league. They were 3-0 or whatever.
Yeah, I'm happy for James. Did you see what Zach Lowe wrote about him?
No.
He called him the Sixers' preposterous starting two guard. Which I thought was a little uncalled for myself.
Yeah, that's not good.
So how they're tanking, so.
Yeah. Speaking of the NBA, real quick, this is not Oklahoma State or Big 12 related, but did you see Victor Oladipo's 360 the other night?
I saw it, and I may or may not have watched the GIF of it 100 times. I remain smitten and the conductor of the Oladipo train.
Again, not Oklahoma State related, but how does Cleveland take Anthony Bennett over Victor Oladipo? I mean, granted, you and I are, I think, admittedly over the top for Oladipo and biased to him or towards him to a fault probably, but how is that even a thing? I mean,
they fell into the trap where they had already drafted a guy at his spot recently. They drafted Deion Waiters, I think the year or two before, and they fall into that trap where we already have a guy at this position. We have to get the best available power forward. No, draft the best player. Tell Waiters, sorry, we're not sorry. We're drafting Victor Oladipo, and figure it out later. Like, NBA teams fall for this all the time. They'll draft need over the best player, and I think that's what happened at the top of the draft. And plus, who saw Anthony Bennett coming in the first place? There were other guys that they thought were going one.
Yeah, well, the Nerlens Noel thing was weird. I was thinking the other day about Simmons' reaction to Anthony Bennett going number one. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah, it was fantastic. It was swear on accident.
I love the NBA. I think it's – I don't know that I ever appreciated it like I do now, just because I love college basketball, and you see a lot of these guys that are – so good and so successful go on and it feels like it's more like it's a much higher level of play than college basketball and therefore more fun, but in a way that I don't feel like the NFL is more fun than college football. So I don't know. I've really enjoyed the NBA a lot the last few years.
Well, in covering the NBA, I've just fallen in love with it because I didn't really like the NBA growing up. I thought it was just not even on the same footing as college basketball, but you and a million kind of touched on it. Like those All-American teams back in the day were just loaded. College basketball has gone way down with the NBA draft. And so I find myself watching more NBA now than I do college basketball, but I'm excited for the season this year. But the NBA, just having a team in Oklahoma City has, I think, opened everyone's eyes in the state about just how great of quality of basketball it is. Because before you thought they were just ball hogs, money hungry guys. Then when you watch a game, you're like, these are the best in the world. Like a simple jump shot is like automatic in the NBA.
Yeah.
In college, it's not.
Yeah, it's definitely not. Speaking we'll end on this, but in terms of pro guys that are on Oklahoma State's team right now, I mean, where do we see these guys ending up getting drafted? I mean, so let's just run through it. Marcus Smart, probably a top 10 pick next year, you think?
Probably top five. Top 10 for sure. We'll see about top five.
Yeah, I think top five's dicey just because you've got Julius Randle and Andrew Wiggins and, you know, all the other – I can't remember off the top of my head, but all the other freshmen that are supposed to be so good this year.
Right, and it'll come down to need at point guard.
Yeah.
And the GMs are going to fawn over themselves when they get to meet Marcus and talk to him and find out how – I'm serious. When they find out how mature the kid is, I think he's going to shoot up the board.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. So he's going top 10. What do we think about Markell Brown? I mean, does he get drafted? Does he go in the late first round, early second round, into the second round? I mean, what do you think his potential is in terms of going to the NBA?
I think he could definitely be a late first round pick. You know, some people were projecting him as a late first rounder last year. Now this draft is a lot better. The big thing for Markell is, what is he going to play at the next level? I know you like him at point guard, which I don't think is a bad idea at all, because he has great length. He can give people problems at point, and I think he can handle the ball pretty well. But you just never know with the NBA. You know, I thought Desmond Mason was going to have – he had a great career. He played 10 years. I thought he was going to be a star. The guy I really thought was going to be a perennial all-star was Joey Graham. Like, that guy's game was perfectly suited for the NBA, and he didn't last a whole – I mean, he played some years, but he never really had a defined role in the NBA. That's a guy I thought was a can't-miss NBA player. So it just depends on the situation they land in and what position Markell's going to play in. But he can shoot the three. He's improved that every year. He's a great defender. And if he can kind of carve out a niche as a backup point guard, I think he can do it.
Yeah, I told somebody, I forgot who I was talking to the other day. It might have been a million. Isn't it kind of insane that John Lucas has lasted in the NBA longer than Joey Graham?
It's almost like, if you had told me that in 2004, I wouldn't have believed you. I mean, I didn't think John Lucas was going to have an NBA career at all. Now he's still around. I don't even think he got drafted, if I want to say.
No, I'm pretty sure he didn't. And Joey went like 12 overall or 13 overall,
yeah,
or something like that.
A lottery pick. And yeah, John Lucas didn't even get drafted, but by sheer will, he's stuck around in the NBA. It just goes to show you never know. I mean, now John Lucas has the NBA pedigree. His dad played there forever, so he knows how it works. But I'm the Joey Graham one is all time for me. When he was playing at OSU, you were like, wait till this guy plays in an NBA offense, because Eddie's offense was pretty slow, pretty methodical, not a whole lot of one-on-one game. And I thought, once you get Joey Graham one-on-one, like, good luck.
Yeah.
That one was surprising to me. You could actually see that Stevie Graham had a better career than Joey. Who ever would have thought that?
Yeah, it really is weird. Yeah, I could see Markell. I feel like I'll probably get made fun of this, but I see him kind of Evan Turner-ish. And I don't know if – I mean – I think Turner's more athletic, but, you know, kind of like he – I don't know. He's not big enough to be a two-guard, I don't think. I think he would be a really big kind of point guard type, don't you?
Yeah, I do. Maybe like a Sean Livingston maybe.
Mike Connolly-ish maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I think he'll have a shot for sure. And just his combine numbers are going to be insane with his vertical leap.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he'll probably end up – just because next year's draft is so good, I think he'll probably end up mid-second round, maybe like 40, something like that, which is awesome. I mean, if Travis Ford can't get to the Sweet 16 with two probably top 40 guys in one lottery pick, that's, you know, well, we can talk about that later. But LeBron Nash, what do you feel like happens with him?
Yeah, I don't know. What does he do well? What's his skill set that's going to make him last in the league? I have a hard time. He's good around the basket. He's good at posting people up, but he's only – I don't know if he's big enough to do that at the NBA level. So he'll have to really work on his jump shot this year. If he shows a really improved jump shot, he's got the physical tools to make it in the NBA. But he's not a high flyer. He's not a streaky shooter. He's not big enough, I don't think, to bang down low. So you have to wonder what – in the NBA, it's all about finding one thing that you do excellent. If you have one skill, you will be in the league for 10 years. Now, he needs to figure out what skill that's going to be.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what it is either. I think that he has a real opportunity this year to show how good he can be down low. Because if he shoots more than like 10 threes this year, I'm going to freak out. Because he should not be doing that. He's 6'8", he's huge. There's nobody in college that can consistently guard him well inside 12 feet. There's just not, and he needs to take advantage of that. And I think if he does, I think he can get drafted and play, because I don't think that NBA GMs care about mental makeup as much as they should. I think that they see a dude who's big or who can jump, and they just freak out, and they're like, you know, they're like little kids watching these guys. So I think that that's the reason that he can make it, not because I think he's mentally tough or whatever.
Well, and I think he likes to pattern himself after Carmelo. They're similar builds. Now, I know he's nowhere near as good as Carmelo Anthony, don't get me wrong, but if he can develop just kind of a mid-range game kind of out there where you can post up and do, you know, jump shots from out there and finish around the basket, that's kind of, I think, the type of player he can be. But I mean, I don't know if you saw, Gerald Green's still in the league. He played against the Thunder on Sunday. So, I mean, he's stuck around. So if you have the pedigree, which I think Nash does, I think you can stick around in the league. But there's a lot to be answered about him for sure.
Yeah, by the way, LeBron Nash, number 59 on Chad Ford's big board right now.
Yeah, that's he's got room to grow, that's for sure. 59 is not very good for what he probably thinks he should be drafted. So,
well, yeah,
this is a big season for him. He can really improve his stock this year with a big season, and he's got a lot to prove.
Yeah, I agree. It should be a fun season. I'm looking forward to it as much as I have any season in recent memory for Oklahoma State basketball, I think.
But yeah, Gallagher Iba should be back to its old self. There were a few games last year that it sold out, and it was back to what it was back in, you know, 2004. So that was good to see, and it's been a long time coming. You got to give Travis Ford credit. He's really recruited well, and getting Marcus Smart was a game changer. And the campus should be fired up for it should be back to being a basketball school this year, I think.
Which, by the way, Chad Ford's big board, no Markel Brown in the top 100.
Wow, that's kind of surprising.
Yeah, that shocks
me. I think that'll change once he gets to, you know, he's a Kansas guy, so he follows the Big 12 pretty closely. I think once the season Big 12 season gets going, I think he'll move Markel Brown up a little bit.
Yeah, I'm going to be looking forward to his annual podcast with Simmons before the draft, freaking out about how good Markel Brown is.
Yeah, well, if Markel drops 30 on Kansas, he will.
I know he will.
Markel Kansas like as closely.
Markel tried to drop 30 on Kansas last year. I think he had 26 or something.
I think Chad must have forgotten about that. I bet you he was on his board after that game, that's for sure.
Okay, Carson Cunningham, appreciate you coming on, and we'll definitely do it again during basketball season whenever that gets going.
Okay, emergency podcast if they wear 88 throwbacks.
Yeah, emergency podcast scheduled for next Sunday night if they wear 88 throwbacks.
Okay, sounds good, man.
Okay, talk to you later.